The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on Newstalk.
A second case of monkeypox has been confirmed in Ireland in the last 24 hours. The HSE has said that public health teams are carrying out contact tracing for both cases. Killian de Gascoigne is director of the National Virus Reference Laboratory and he joins me now. In terms of the spread of the virus, the last time we heard contact tracing, it was a desperate breakneck speed attempt to get ahead of the spread of COVID.
Yeah.
Monkeypox, I get the sense, doesn't spread anything like as quickly.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Thankfully, it would be a virus that would be considered not to be terribly infectious. So you need typically quite prolonged close contact to acquire it. So the people that we would generally see, and again, a lot of this, I suppose, information will be coming from endemic regions. So Central Africa, Western Africa, where the virus typically hangs out. So what we typically see would be cases in people in household contacts and sexual contacts and in healthcare workers. So that prolonged close contact is where we typically see it.
So it's not particularly airborne. It is mostly in physical contact.
Mostly in physical contact, also by respiratory droplets. But what's interesting about this virus is that it's actually very durable and can survive for months in the environment. So one of the key things about monkeypox, in contrast to, say, some other viruses, is that actually things like clothing and bedding can become contaminated.
And sure, then, of course, the British military gave Native Americans smallpox contaminated blankets by way of germ warfare in the early stage.
Yeah,
which exactly. Is essentially the same thing. It can stay in the blanket.
Exactly. So pox viruses are very, very robust and resilient. And I suppose the challenge, so the reason we were able to eradicate smallpox was because it doesn't have an animal reservoir. Humans were the natural host. So the problem, the challenge with monkeypox, obviously, is that it does have an animal reservoir, not monkeys, as the name might suggest, but actually rodents such as squirrels and rats and mice, certain species of mice in Central Africa and West Africa. Now, primates, sort of monkeys, can become infected. That's where the virus was first discovered or reported in 1958. And then the first human case was in 1970. So it's a virus that thankfully, so I think we're over 500 cases now globally as part of this current event. And thankfully, all of the cases have been mild. Some people have been hospitalised, but nobody in intensive care and no deaths reported to date, as far as I know.
Can you explain a little bit about the spread? Because with COVID, it was more understandable in that COVID appeared, there was the genesis, and then there was a rapid spread around the world. With something that has been endemic since 1950s in a certain country, what causes it to suddenly depart those countries?
Yes, that's a really good question. And I don't think we know the answer to that in the context of this current outbreak. So I suppose there are two things that are... So this current outbreak is probably not a cause for panic at this stage. It's certainly a cause for concern, because what we want to do is identify cases and break chains of transmission. And again, given the past 2 years that we've been through with COVID, we believe that breaking those chains of transmission for monkeypox should be more straightforward. So that's, we're very much in a containment phase, so control and containment for monkeypox. I think what's also concerning, though, on a more global level in the longer term, is that we have seen, even in endemic regions in West Africa and Central Africa, that the number of cases of human monkeypox infection has increased quite significantly over the last four decades. So that is something that we would be worried about, because the more often we get these spillover events and humans get infected, the more opportunity that the virus has to get used to us and adapt to us and perhaps become a more common human pathogen. And so the reason we believe that we've seen that increase in cases in endemic regions is partly because we have eliminated smallpox and we've also stopped vaccinating against smallpox. So these are obviously related viruses. So smallpox actually probably would have been one of monkeypox's sort of main competitors. And the fact that smallpox was more transmissible, more infectious, meant that monkeypox didn't really get a look in simple terms. Obviously, we vaccinated and we know that the smallpox vaccine probably provides about 85% protection against monkeypox. So what we're seeing now in endemic regions is those people who would have been born and grown up after the smallpox vaccination program was finished are starting to get infections now.
On the topic of smallpox, is it unique in human medical history? Because the last case of smallpox, other than laboratory breakouts, is known. I think it was 1977. There was
79, I think.
79.
Yeah,
but is that the only time that we have completely tackled a disease and fought it back into non-existence?
Yes. Yeah. So it's success. Now we're very close with polio. So polio is three types, and two of the types are have been eradicated. The problem with one of the challenges, funnily enough, with polio is that we still have circulating vaccine-derived polio, because the poliovirus, there are two different poliovirus or poliovirus vaccine types. One of them is live, and given my mouth, that was the old sugar drop, the sugar pill, the sugar cube, people will remember. And then the other is an injectable, inactivated form. That's what we would get here and in most developed countries. But the transition to an inactivated form is what you do when you get near to the end of the eradication program. So polio has been really successful, but the problem is we're not there yet because there's an asymptomatic carrier stage and people can shed for long periods of time. So immunocompromised people can shed for long periods of time. We're also making great progress with measles and rubella, but ultimately,
we had a big measles outbreak a while ago, didn't we? By modern standards, a big measles outbreak.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And again, so the challenge with measles, so a lot of these things come back to sort of how effective the vaccine is, what your uptake is like. So the measles vaccine is probably 95% effective. But in order then to get, and it's highly infectious, highly contagious, but in order to get to that herd immunity threshold that, again, we would have spent a lot of the last couple of years talking about, you probably need your uptake of vaccine to be about sort of between 93% to 95%. So really, that's why we have the second dose of the MMR for in developed countries. But in developing countries, it's obviously harder to get to those sort of high levels of uptake.
Text asking, is it true that anyone vaccinated against smallpox as a child is likely to remain protected from monkeypox?
Yeah, so it's not 100% protection, but as I said, we believe it's about 85%. So yes is a short answer. So it's likely that the cases that we see in, say, in Ireland or in other countries where they would have been probably vaccinating against smallpox up to probably the early to mid-70s.
Ireland, did we, until the 70s?
I'd need to double check that, but just globally in Europe, that would have been when, because as I said, when you stopped having cases, and as I said, when it was eradicated in 79, so I think most of the developed countries probably stopped in the region of the mid-70s. It might have been 1980, but I think it was mid-70s. And so anybody born before we stopped vaccinating, yes, should have some protection against monkeypox.
Do they still keep a couple of tubes of smallpox knocking around?
The actual virus?
Yeah.
Not to my knowledge. There's sort of speculation that it may be in labs somewhere, but not the intention was certainly that it would all be destroyed. So unless there's some in, I suppose, some nefarious characters' labs that they're retaining for some reason, but the idea was that they would all be destroyed after the virus was eradicated.
It's not possible yet, although soon the time will come to say the sentence. Joining me now is Cillian de Gascoigne, without including COVID somewhere along the line. So we should get it out of the way.
Okay.
Where are we at in all that? What of future variants? And is this relatively benign environment in which we are now living going to be here forever?
That's a really good question, and it's really difficult to answer. So I think if we look at what's circulating at the moment, and again, I suppose it's worth reminding people that the virus hasn't gone away. We've still a significant number of cases every day. We obviously still have some people in hospital, some people in intensive care. So people should still be cognizant of that. And if they haven't been vaccinated, they should come forward and get their vaccine and get their booster, all of those things. But the variants that we see predominantly circulating at the moment, so we're still sub-lineages of Omicron. So people remember BA1, BA2, the current ones that were slightly concerned about are BA4 and BA5. And the reason we're slightly concerned about them is because there's not great cross protection. So if you were infected with Delta, say, before Christmas, or with Omicron BA1, you don't have great protection against BA4 or BA5. So again, if you're due a booster, go and get that. However, the good thing, I suppose, about BA4 and BA5 is that while they're causing more infections in certain countries, some countries are seeing peaks in case numbers again, or increase in case numbers again, they're not seeing dramatic increases in hospitalizations or severe disease. So they're not causing more severe disease yet. The vaccines are still providing really good protection against severe disease and hospitalization. And then we're still learning about it. So there's another variant, BA.2.12.1, that is, I think, accounts for more than 63 or 65% of cases in the States at the moment, but yet hasn't taken off here. So we're not too sure why that is. It's so we still have a lot to learn. But in general, from if we look towards sort of the next 6 months, towards the winter, if we stay with sublineages of Omicron and variants thereof, then there's a good chance that while we may get increase in case numbers every so often, that the vaccines will provide good protection. I suppose our concern, and the thing that we're, you know, our surveillance program is still in place, I suppose, just to assure people, we haven't sort of, you know, turned everything off and gone home. Our surveillance program is still in place. So what we don't really want to happen is a new variant that is not related to anything we've seen before and just comes out of left field.
But with the usual caveats wrapped around it, that there's no guarantees, where we currently stand isn't a bad position.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think we're doing well.
On that note, Killian de Gascoigne, thank you very much. That is Killian de Gascoigne, who's director of the National Virus Reference Laboratory. Now we'll try to win you some money.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.